everyone. Welcome to the Pearl Lamb podcast. Today, I have the honor to interview John Lim. And John, can you give the audience some brief about yourself?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm John. I'm the founder and creative director of This Humid House. And we're a botanical design studio founded in Singapore. Well, a lot of people ask, what is a botanical design studio? And very, very broadly, we work with plants and flowers across very many disciplines. And we work on everything from, retail arrangements or even a small boutonniere to landscape design. Yeah. So it's a very broad use of living material across many disciplines.
So why is the name Humid House?
Well, I think that's a very good question.
Because I'm scared of humidity. Yes. I run away.
But you know what? You know what, Pearl? So I'm born in Singapore and I was raised here. And this it is a metaphor for being in Singapore, which is a giant humid house. And I think what we try to do is, I'm very frustrated by the heat here, but there's a lot of flora that thrives in this heat. And so it's a way of declaring it as kind of affectionately as a humid house. And we try to create beautiful things that are made from the flora of this climate and also inspired by that. So it's in a way, it's a bit of a coping mechanism for being here.
Okay, when I read about you, you want to push out that you are Singaporean. This is what Singaporean art or your production, you're representing Singapore. How do you define Singaporean?
I think Singaporeans always ask themselves what it is to be Singaporean, because we are a very young country. And I think everyone is, even like second or third generation, or even first generation, right? And so I think the definition is very loose. I think what we're trying to focus on is kind of like a sense of place of being here. And I think that's a little bit more of an ambiguous definition. I know that being Singaporean means being exposed to a lot of different cultural influences, right? I know that being Singaporean means having been through the school system, for example. I know that being Singaporean means having this idea that you came from a very small country, a very small island, and that there's a big world out there, for example.
Singaporeans are very proud to be Singaporeans versus Hong Kong. We are really lack of like the spirit of Singaporean spirit.
Wow, that's a very nice thing to say. I think maybe the Singaporeans you meet are very proud of being Singaporean. I know Singaporeans are very proud of being Singapore Airlines.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. They love Singaporean Airlines. Nice. Okay, so let's talk about how you went to America. You study architecture.
Yes.
You study architecture. Architecture takes 7 years architecture.
Yes.
I mean, after 7 years, you were working in architect firm.
Yes.
Firm
yes.
in New York yes. and in China as well.
Beijing, yes.
Well, in Beijing.
Yeah.
So how and why as an architect to become a florist? Because, well, you know, architecture takes you so long to even to get this license.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to study architecture, but I was forbid by my parents.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I always thought that architecture is fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you have to run from E&M to yeah. structure.
Absolutely.
And creating this living space, and yes. especially with today's technology. I mean, it is so much more interesting, but just to do flowers.
Yes, 100%. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's I ran away from architecture because it took too long.
And so I'm very it is very, very long. Very long.
Like the firms that I worked in, you know, I was introduced to projects where the project folder was set up 8 years ago, right? And I was like, wow, like this is version 84, for example. And like I was just like, wow, this is not moving. And I think I was probably like just by nature drawn to something that had a quicker turnover. And actually working with flowers, it's probably the quickest turnover. I have to say, though, that like I think that I have absolutely no regrets. And I think I'm so thankful for my education in architecture, because what it does is that it teaches you to design at the largest scale. And I went to a fantastic architecture school, the Cooper Union in New York. And I remember very early on, one of my professors saying that one of the students he's proudest of is an architect that went into architecture school, but eventually designed a heart valve. For a medical company. And that went on to win many patents. And he thought, like, wow, you know, like, I think design is design. And I think architecture teaches you to design at the largest scale possible. And it gives you a kind of confidence. And what I do essentially every day with plants and flowers is still essentially design. Yeah.
But how did this transformation started?
Well, you know what? I've always liked plants and flowers, but in a very kind of, my grandpa was, you know, loved growing things. And so I've always had a kind of fascination for it, but it wasn't until my brother's wedding that I was taking a break from work. I was just working in China for like about 4 years, came back to Singapore, and he said, like, can you help me with my flowers? And I was like, oh, okay, fine. I'll do some research. I'll help you out. And my brother grew up here, but my sister-in-law is from Florida, and which is also very, very tropical. And they like food, and they didn't, you know, like in terms of flowers, they didn't really have a kind of preference for them. And so I was like, oh, okay, like, let's do something that kind of represents you and tells your story. So what about we use like crazy vegetables or like, you know, all these things that are more meaningful to you. And so I drew up a very extensive brief that had vegetables and like, you know, had weird instructions, and I gave them to florists here, and everyone thought I was a psycho. And no one wanted to do this project. So I was like, okay, no one's going to do it. Let me try to do it myself. So I got together a whole bunch of friends and we put it together. And it looked like a real DIY amateur hour situation, but I really enjoyed myself and it was very meaningful for everyone. And I was like, hey, like, there's something here that I would like to explore. And then from there, it, you know, things happened very quickly. Another friend asked me to do something. And then I thought, actually, there's something here that is a little bit deeper. You know, I think that, you know, I think it's very strange, for example, at the time in Singapore, like this was like 2014, that the predominant style was rustic English romantic, right? And for people who never grew up in that kind of scenario, it was very foreign and very strange that, like, on your wedding day, that you would decide to use roses, hydrangeas, and, like, you know, adopt this like weird countryside style that does not speak to me. And so I thought, hey, actually, fundamentally, there's like a way for plants and flowers to like give meaning to people's important life events. I mean, births, marriages, deaths. Yeah.
And so you all of a sudden you start a business in doing floristry, or what?
So it things happened very quickly, and I you know, very soon I was asked to do a wedding for that, you know, that had six-figure budget. And I was just like, wow, I don't even have a company at this point. What do I do? So I think, you know, I put out ads in the classifieds. I you know, assembled a team. And actually, a lot of people from that team are still with me today.
Amazing. Yes. You were telling me that you have a very good archive and you put a lot of pictures on the social media. And that actually, increase your increase people awareness of your work. So let me know whether the social media did help you to grow your business.
I think we wouldn't be here if not for social media. That's the power of social media. In a way, you know, like it gave a platform for our work to be seen, and it you know, like and that was kind of the litmus test, right? If it sinks or swims. And we had a lot of very encouraging response right from the start, which told us that we were making things that caused a reaction or like spoke to people.
So every piece of work that you do you post?
No, I would say that we probably post only about 30-40% of the work that we do. Yeah. Some of it we can't post because of NDAs. Yeah.
I mean, it seems that social media does change a lot on the art world, because I saw a lot of young artists as well.
Yes.
Because of social media, the galleries actually went and got and
directly.
Get
them. Yes, yes.
Or and like, so yeah. And so your clients actually go through social media, yes, to pick you.
Yes. Wow.
So now are you just doing business in Singapore or you're going around the world?
So we have an office in Paris as well.
Well, when did you open your office in Paris?
2 years ago.
Wow, and how was it? Because Parisian, I'm like, oh, there's a Singaporean? My God, look at that day. They're so snobbish and arrogant. You have to prove yourself by, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think one of the things that were very encouraging, so my ex-head of design, now co-creative director, she's French-Japanese, and she was an expat living in Singapore, and she was one of the first people that I ever hired on my team. And she had to go back she was going to go back to Paris eventually. And when she, you know, a couple of years ago broached the idea of, hey, why don't we set up something in Paris? I love what I'm doing. Let's continue doing this. I was like, what can we teach or like, what can we contribute to French people or like what the French are doing?
I mean, I never knew that Singapore actually has their own, production of flowers and all that until the Marina Bay Sand opened.
Yes.
When you go to the tropical garden.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden you see these flowers. Does it inspire you? Is this why you started all these forestry flower arrangement?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So the thing is that there are a lot of flowers that grow in the tropics, but because Singapore is so green, it took me a while. I call this plant blindness when you know, like you see in another context and you're like, wow, this is something, but you actually have a lot of this right in front of you. And because Singapore is so green and the National Parks Board does such a good job that people are kind of inured or numb to your kind of visual environment. So it took me a long time. And because I was in the business, my eyes were suddenly open to observing all these things. Now, very interestingly, and this is how policy really kind of shapes a country, Singapore used to be one of the largest orchid exporters in the world.
Really? Orchids?
Yes, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize.
But because it was such a high and intensive industry, labor-intensive industry, and very costly and space-requiring industry, it actually has been defunded through the lack of incentives, et cetera, whereas the government wanted you to, say, invest more in high-intensity agriculture, for example, that's hydroponic or, you know, like vertical. Yeah. And so there are very, very few orchid growers from that era left, and we try to support them as best as we can at this point.
You know, I see that you have a lot of collection of ceramics.
Yes.
Right? I mean, do you combine some ceramics? Are these for sale or are these for, is your collection?
So these are all part of our collection, and we use them in a lot of our clients' homes, restaurants, and even in hotels, and they have the benefit of the vessels from our collection that we use. Yeah. And the reason why we have such a large collection is because I think that that is a very important kind of cultural component in floristry, which you know, I think, you know, flowers require vessels or water source.
Yeah,
and that's why it was important for us to start this collection.
So you started this collection when? As soon as you open or?
That's a very good question. I have been a very avid buyer of stuff from flea markets around the world. And I think I had a little bit to start with, but then this gave me such a good excuse to...
to become a shopaholic.
Become a shopaholic. So I have had to travel with a big pelican case, an empty one. And I just, you know, along all the work trips, I've learned to be... a bit of a hoarder, yeah.
When I read about you, you talk about lots about culture.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
And you see that you want your flower arrangement, your floristry, to be very linked with your culture.
Yes.
So how, you know, like this one,
yeah.
How do you connect culture and floristry?
I think it's a very interesting question. I feel like, yes, in the context of being in Singapore, everyone actually has a relationship with plants and flowers, whether they understand it or not, right? Or they're sensitized or aware of it or not, right? It could be even like a smell, you know? There is and I will always remember this, there is a tree called the Devil's Tree. I love the
Devil's Tree.
Yeah, and it's called, well, it's Elsonia scalaris. And when I grew up, at certain times of the year, there would be this smell in the air that I could never put a finger on. And very, very, like maybe only about 6 or 7 years ago, And that's formed like a very important part of my brain chemistry, because like it's such a beautiful, intoxicating smell, and I only knew what flower it came from, and it's so strong that one tree in a neighborhood is enough to perfume the entire neighborhood.
Wow.
I want to bottle it. It's such a rare, fleeting fragrance because, you know, like maybe over 3 or 4 days when it blooms. But that is an essential part of my core memory. Everyone has a relationship with food, for example, right? Or a taste memory of food or an idea of the food they grew up with. I think that the same kind of sophistication with talking about food is the same thing that we can bring to plants and flowers. And there's such potential there for it to tell stories. Actually, I just to piggyback off a conversation that we had earlier off camera, and you talked about the cultural evolution, and you talked about the tradition of the literati in China, where there was a beautiful appreciation for plants and flowers, and you know that translated to like say bird and flower painting in the Tang Dynasty.
For example. Because the Chinese literati is, I mean, they one of the most important thing about them is they love to live and connect it with nature, Taoism. It's all about Taoism connected with the nature. And they usually they will become, their aspiration is to become government Chinese Mandarin.
Yes.
And they usually get frustrated by the emperor, and then they will escape to the bamboo forest and start painting.
Yes. So I actually read something that you had said before that really stuck with me, and that is that the literati were essentially cross-disciplinary.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. They're multidisciplinary.
And so there was no actual formal designation of that, of them being an artist, for example.
No, because the word called artist, art, actually is only came out in 1904 or 1905. And there is no, I mean, in China, there's nothing called art before then. I mean, your Chinese literati, they have to do calligraphy, music, bows, arrows, and architecture, painting, everything. You are supposed to be multidisciplined.
Absolutely.
Because we believe that the culture itself has to be influenced in a multidisciplinary way.
Absolutely. And so in that way, when they use or admire plants and flowers, it literally was an art form. Right. And so I think there wasn't that definition of when, you know, art begins. Like it was an appreciation that was essentially elevating that appreciation to an art form, where be it through a painting of landscape or actually bringing flowers into the home.
So actually you are adopting the really Chinese literati way of interpreting art.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because when we talk about the West, then it's absolutely different, because West has a hierarchy of art form.
Yes.
So you find art over design and over decoration.
Yes.
So it's completely two different things. For years, people has been fighting. I think now is that they're about cross-discipline and multidiscipline, and there should not be a segregation of art and design. And there should not be any discrimination.
Absolutely.
There was intellectually, they were fighting for decades.
Yeah. I have to show you something. One second. Yeah. I'm going to bring and show you something. So I have this, this is a gold thread embroidery of, so this is gold thread embroidery.
Yeah, this is.
Of that's I think probably set on an altar, and I think this really encapsulates the spirit of what we were doing. I got this antique from I can't remember where, but you see the beautiful kind of vessels and all the symbolism. For example, you know there are like these bats, for example.
Bats means folk prosperity.
Prosperity, and it also has a lot of like very interesting fruit, like the Buddha hand fruit.
Yeah.
Hand fruit over here.
And I think all the auspicious,
like, you know, what I think
symbols.
Is, you know, and also this is probably a magnolia flower, for example, which, you know, symbolizes springtime and rejuvenation. So I think this for me is very meaningful because, like, you know, this was a kind of a very, very early reverence for the natural world and also culture. And I think it encapsulates the spirit of what we try to do here.
Actually, I like the way that you're talking about the Chinese literati art, but actually you study Bauhaus.
Yes.
Well, Bauhaus was the same.
Yes.
It's just that when they arrive in America, everything changed.
Yes.
About the hierarchy.
Yes.
Okay, does this Bauhaus idea also influence the way that you connect with your creation?
I think the Bauhaus had a very complex point of view. What's helpful about that is actually the clarity of what they're trying to express.
Yeah, because what I see in you
yeah.
is Bauhaus link ingrained with Chinese culture. Yeah, that's okay. how I see it. Yeah.
That's a wonderful interpretation.
Because I think yeah. that what you are doing is actually, this is like the multidiscipline, what Bauhaus has been preaching and teaching. But there you find back your culture and you want to bring your culture back to interpret in whatever you are Absolutely. You are creating.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never heard of that perspective before, but that's kind of refreshing to think about. And certainly,
because you study architecture, you have to be influenced by Bauhaus.
Yes.
Even if you don't consciously think yes. about it,
yes. Yes.
it must be at the back of your mind.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mind, and to do things, whatever you're doing, is a Bauhaus approach. Rather than a Chinese literati approach, because I think Chinese literati is so old, mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm, so tradition. Mm-hmm. Maybe we don't connect with it,
yes,
but
yes.
your Bauhaus approach definitely connected
that's
with
a,
it.
That's a very flattering perspective.
Yeah, and then you're looking into, of course, because you're Chinese, you want to look about Chinese culture and how this influenced your flower arrangement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have to say that because we're also in Paris, I think what has been very helpful is that we also look at other floral traditions around the world.
Yeah.
I mean, Constance Bree in London, for example, or the UK, mm-hmm. she's been so influential for a kind of bringing in a kind of naturalism. And if you look at, French floral design, for example, there was this idea of a projection of power, right?
Yes, because French, if you see French garden,
yeah.
they are very contrived. Very contrived. Everything is being cut mm-hmm. in a certain shape. Mm-hmm. It shows power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, but if you look at Trocadero as well,
yes.
you look at that, it looks like a fascist building. It's very, it's that power thing that you're talking about. And of course, I mean, English garden is beautiful because it's about free form.
Yes, yes.
It's that
yes,
natural yes, going into yes, rose garden, walking, yes. because English countryside is beautiful because
Absolutely.
Of this free form.
Yes, yes, yes. And I love that this is such a bold expression of it in gardens, which you don't get culturally and even in their food, for
no.
example.
No, so. But how do you bring all that into doing table decoration or decorating a whole wedding venue? How do you bring all that?
That's a very good question. And I think it really comes to understanding plants and flowers as just being signifiers.
Wow. So you really love plants and flowers.
Yeah, they're just signifiers. And I think, and they're signifiers and with enough elements of it, and composed in a way, it paints a picture of maybe a narrative or story, or it gives a sense of place. So understanding the inherent power of the symbols of these objects from various cultures or various disciplines, it gives you a kind of a latitude to express something.
When you were in Paris, how did they see how you recreate, flowers, forestry, and do they get what you're doing?
I think some people do. I think some people do. I think since we've been in Paris, there have been a lot of people who've reached out to us because they find an affinity with it, and they find themselves seen in it in a way, right? And I think that's the most powerful thing,
yeah.
where you're able to create something with that people identify with, and speak to them. Yeah. So yes, they've come out of the woodwork, and I think there's the whole revolution in floristry.
Singapore must be celebrating you because you are one of a kind.
Thank you. There's nothing.
I mean, really, there's nothing like this from Singapore. I never know of Singapore being a very creative.
Mm-hmm.
You have a very creative industry. I always thought that because the education system,
mm-hmm.
the education system is high, but the education system is not encouraging you to be innovative or being creative, even though you have design school that push you to be
yes,
creative.
Yes.
But creative and innovation could not be pushed. So how are you seeing you coming out from this system and you have achieved being innovative and creative?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What will you say to the other kids who are studying? And And do they have dreams? Because vision and dreams are very important, and also to have courage to execute it.
Yes. Well, I was very lucky to be able to get out, right, and see more. And that's, I think, what I would encourage everyone to try to do.
Are you inspired by any artist when you create anything? When you create your piece?
It's interesting, but I get the question a lot, where do you get my inspiration from? And actually, I think for me personally, and actually this is a question that I wanted to ask you, is what art are you most drawn to, like personally, that really, like, you know, almost have
my mother always explained to her friends, whatever we don't understand, this is what Pearl likes. Whatever this messy, chaotic take, and whatever we don't understand, this is exactly what she would go after.
And you know, that has a kind of origin story in your childhood. You almost either wanted to the opposite of what people wanted, because you wanted something different.
I don't know, because wherever I look at things, I mean, I don't, when I look at a painting, you know, it's there. I like it. I mean, you know, I actually tell my clients, okay, before you collect the art, you do research. I don't do anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I just buy what I want.
Yeah.
Want, if I can afford it, just, you know, I collect.
Yeah.
I don't see it as an investment. Yeah. I don't see it as anything. I just, but don't necessarily is anything that anybody would want. But eventually, I think I change people's perception.
Exactly me. I think I'm most inspired by actually like things that are not contrived. So for example, like, yes, for certainly nature, and when you go out to a rainforest, for example, it's so uncomfortable. I mean, literally, you go in there and you're like attacked by mosquitoes in like 5 minutes. Going to a rainforest is very different from going to a temperate forest. It's very uncomfortable. But within there, like, you can see, like, oh, well, there's a kind of feverishness in how things are overgrown and how things are entangled and how things, and so like I get inspiration from looking at trash and even like rubbish, for example, where, like,
because,
you know, it's
forms.
Kind of uncultivated.
The forms.
Absolutely, the forms.
The forms.
And because of that, like, I you know, like, even with art, I was in my formative years, very, very much invested in abstract expressionists and like Cy Twombly.
I love abstract.
Because, like, you know, there was a kind of like freedom with the mark making. And I think I kind of apply that kind of like almost like let's conduct an experiment and just let's see what happens kind of approach to what we do with flowers. And I think that's exciting.
Which period of architecture do you like?
You know, I was, in some ways, a very fierce modernist.
Oh, really?
When I first started
Corbusier.
I think I really, you know, I saw architecture as a way to control the environment. And I think, you know, in terms of where I was in my life at that point, that was a very helpful kind of soothing mechanism for control, right? But as I, you know, grew older and, like, you know, I really actually now have a deep appreciation for history and very, very old things. And you know, like, I used to, you know, like at the Met, for example, I used to, like, walk past all the medieval galleries because it's not
me
interested.
Too. Up to now, I'm like this. I've walked through all the medieval.
But now I'm just fascinated by, like even silversmithing and craft and all of those things. So, like, I don't know. One of the things that I think is really important, and I think, like, actually I even want to say this to architects. So many architects are so afraid of color, petrified of color.
Oh, that is modernist, not there.
No,
after.
Actually, the real modernist and Corbusier and you know. Like,
Corbusier will only have white and black,
no,
and not even gray.
If you look at Chandragupta and like all the beautiful colors, like he was, it was so brilliant. Like I'll show you pictures after this.
Okay.
And for some reason, like, you know, with this idea of whiteness or whatever, like it kind of disappeared. And I think the world of flowers and color for me was so important, is opening up an emotional world.
I think modernism, we have to understand that modernism is a reaction
Yes.
of the 19th century
excess.
Yeah, excess, yeah, the door, and yeah. the ornaments of the building. Yeah. Everything yeah. is a reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, when it comes to too many of this high-rise, steel building, we want colors.
Yes.
We want warmth. Yes. We want something different.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a fascinating perspective. And things go in cycles, right? So you have the ornamentation, and now you have, you know, this. But then with the computer design, for example, yeah. things are becoming almost mannerist Baroque yeah, again.
Absolutely.
So
how does your home look like? How many are you decorated, surrounded yourself with rocks, flowers, ceramics?
No, you'd be surprised. I live in a kind of aesthetic way at home. Like, there are no flowers, there are no plants, because, like, you know, I think I
minimalist.
I need clarity and order at home. Yeah, when life is already chaotic enough. Yeah.
Let's talk about these Asian artists.
Yeah.
Do they actually need to talk about Asia? To have this Asia culture in order to communicate with
yes.
and with the West yes. to make them significant. Mm-hmm. Do they need it? I mean, for me, it's very different from you, because we are talking about, you know, when you talk about contemporary art, we're yeah. talking about conceptual art.
Yes.
Conceptual art is about politics,
yes.
society, philosophy. How many artists has been criticizing China? Immediately, they are worshipped by the West.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's almost like bait.
Yeah, yeah, because you talk about conceptual art, and yeah. in China,
yeah.
you cannot use art to talk about politics, religion, or sex.
Yeah.
So obviously, they're not talking about that. And
yes.
even when we talk about philosophy,
yeah.
are we talking about Taoism philosophy, or are we talking about Klein?
Yes.
So all these are. I mean, I always say that art is a platform that allowed us to have a cultural exchange.
Yes.
And depending on how we push forward about that.
Yes.
So what I mean, for you, how are you going to bring all this culture into your creation of plant?
I think there's a way to do it that is unexpected. I think that's really important for me, that it's not lazy. Right, I think you can't say that, oh my gosh, Asian flavors just because I put soy sauce in something, right? You know, I think there is a very kind of interesting way, and this really, there needs to be an understanding of the pulse of society, for example, where, you know, okay, it's just like I'm gonna, and I love talking about food, because I think that
I'm a foodie.
I love food, and I think that's a very kind of accessible way of understanding things. Like, you know, you put a bit of preserved lemon in something, and suddenly you're like in North Africa, for example. And I think you have that same power with plants and flowers. Like, you know, like and even with kind of almost like biomimicry, right? So we put together different elements, like, oh, the leaf can be from somewhere, but the flower itself, and you have the fruit of somewhere, but you can be very playful in addressing, oh, this is like how it looks like in nature, but we're kind of subverting that a little bit. And then we introduce a bit of a cultural element or something that feels foreign, but, you know, like, or something like that. And together, compositionally, you get something that's a very sophisticated kind of expression of what you're trying to say. And I think, you know, I think there definitely is that culture element there in a way that's not lazy.
Do you need to talk culture, talk Asia in order to make
people
to make yourself
it?
To be competitive? In the,
no,
in the
I feel like the beauty of this is that people get it immediately if they identify with it, and that's how that's.
It's different because we're talking about aesthetic.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so it's very different from the art world. The art world, we're not so much talking about aesthetic. We're
yes.
talking about intellect as
and
well.
Ideas.
Ideas and intellect and all that, but aesthetic is much easier.
Yes.
To understand or embrace. You can reject it, but when you look, you want something different, you want something new, you want something exciting.
But it's a real ability for plants and flowers to do the same thing. We, for example, we did this art installation at the Esplanade, and it was a commissioned piece, and it was in their big hall. And what we did was, I'm not sure if you're familiar with sarong rockers, you know, in Asia, there's this like spring mechanism and with a sarong. And they put like babies in there, and the thing would just rock, and it would lull babies to sleep. And I've always found that mechanism to be very, very disturbing. because it's like, wow, like, you know, my precious child is now put in this like very kind of like mechanical situation, and it's just like subject to not their volition. And like, so what we did was we got the most massive palm leaves that we could, and we had like hundreds of sarong rockers in the space, and we attached the leaves to them. And every 10 minutes we would like activate it, and it would just go up and down and up and down and up and down and bounce, right? And I think the very subtle messaging in that was like, I think there is a kind of infantilization that happens when you're basically subjected to policy, for example. And I think there was an element of that installation that was a little bit institutional in its critique, but done in a very soft way. And I think, you know, plants and flowers and even food has this very soft power.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, I think it was a very effective medium to get a message.
Less across. Intimidating.
Yes. Yeah. It's in Singapore, we like to call it orchid diplomacy.
Orchid diplomacy. I love it. John, it's such a nice time spending time with you. I'm dying to see your workshop, to see some of your work. I know you have no work to show me, but I've been enjoying looking at your and all your ceramics, and especially those are very strange shape vases, which I love. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.